sports yet.
Oh, my heavens!
One host knows sports.
And who's right there?
The other doesn't know sports, but somehow they meet in the middle. Corey Mann.
Get your big butt out of here!
And Indiana Sports Broadcast Hall of Famer.
This one will be relived.
Chuck Freebie.
Forever!
Do you like sports? Because we like sports. Let's talk about sports. It's Sports Shack. Sports Shack. It's Sports Shack.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that's demonstrated zero aptitude for science, it's SIFPOP. Welcome to SIFPOP Weekly, streaming live most Saturday mornings or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks. I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. He once stuck a hamster in his mouth and set it on fire. It's Ian Whittington, everyone. Well, I didn't say you were doing it now. Okay, I didn't say okay. It was happening right
Hello.
Now. thank you for joining today.
Well, thank you for having me.
We're going to have a good time talking Ghostbusters Afterlife.
There we are.
Which the hamster thing is a reference to one of the many jokes that McKenna Grace tells in the movie.
Yeah.
Encanto as well, going to be on the review table. We're going to talk about best ever ghost movies. And then, of course, do some buried treasure at the end. I will say, before we get into this, the next month or two, going to be really interesting on SIFPOP. It's like, I'm just telling you, this time of year, I'm going places, doing things, award stuff is happening. I've kind of laid out the schedule and it's pretty much insane. And, you know, it's just going to, there's going to be times where it's like, was that episode 30 minutes long? And I'll just be, yeah, you know, it was one of those days. It may be this episode may be 30 minutes long. You never know.
There's a lot happening.
And that goes for the live show as well. We're not actually doing a live show for this episode. We're not going live on YouTube. We will continue to try to go live on YouTube when we can. But again, we're trying to squeeze in these recordings as much as we can over what is a crazy couple months in my life. So,
and I'm just too unreliable to be in a live show anymore. I'm too much of a loose cannon.
That's pretty much what it was. I was like, Ian's going to be on.
Kill the cameras.
Beep, like he doesn't, beep. You know, like he's shirtless, and you know, we just don't want anything to
thank you
to happen. All right, so we're going to get into it and kick it off with a little Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Ooh, yeah.
What is happening here?
Somehow, a town with no fault lines is shaking on a daily basis.
Maybe it's the apocalypse. Egon came out here for a reason.
Are you troubled by strange noises in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread in your basement or attic?
Have you or any of your family ever seen a spook, specter, or ghost?
You guys hear that?
Something's coming.
When a single mom and her two kids arrive in a small town, they begin to discover their connection to the original Ghostbusters and the secret legacy their grandfather left behind. Ghostbusters Afterlife. Interesting story behind this one. Mm-hmm. You may remember in 1984, there was a movie called Ghostbusters.
Little thing.
You know, I say that almost jokingly, but there are plenty of people for whom the Ghostbusters thing is kind of old, like history, right?
Yeah, but you must be aware of it. I don't think there's anybody that watches films that's like, yeah, no, I never heard of the Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think there might be. I think really? There might be a few people,
oh,
yeah.
That's sad.
This brings us Finn Wolfhard and McKenna Grace mm-hmm. As brother and sister, and Carrie Coon as their mother. Love Carrie Coon, love what she does. And they kind of, they're kind of trying to figure out their life, and they, you know, figure out they have this relation going on to this ghost busting thing. What did you think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I didn't like it. That's Ooh. Where I've landed. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
It did, busting on this occasion did not make me feel good.
Good to know. I'm in the it's just okay camp.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even high side of just okay. For me, and since I liked it a little bit more, I'll start. for me, there's enough going on here that I come away going, man, there's a seed of something interesting here. Like,
there's
almost enough here that I want to put this in the rearview mirror and see what the next one's like. Like, bring me another one with McKenna Grace and Finn Wolfhard, Carrie Coon, and let me see Paul Rudd, and let me see their story. Because I thought that's what we were getting here, and it doesn't exactly work out that way. And we won't spoil everything, but I don't know that it's unknown, you know, what this movie is doing with its nostalgia and, you know, tying it back to the original team and all that. And that nostalgia stuff for me does kind of handcuff the proceedings, especially towards the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
But for the first, 70% of this movie, I was like, okay, all right. Like, you're in the world, you're kind of building it a little bit. Yeah, there's some ridiculousness, but this is Ghostbusters. Paul Rudd is always fun to hang out with. You know, I'm enjoying him. Like I said, I like Carrie Coon. The kids are cool and fun, and, you know, their discovery of the, you know, the car and the things with the car and, you know, how the ghost busting works and all that kind of stuff. I was like, all right, new generation, let's go. Let's do this. And really enjoyed it. What were some of the things that you enjoyed about the movie, even though you didn't like it?
What you said about them, basically the first half. So discovering Ecto-1 and... they share the same joy that I think I'd have if I, at any age, discovered all of the gadgets. The seeing, like, I know we had a little bit of this in 2016, but seeing the old Ghostbusters gear with modern effects, pretty much as true to the 1984 film as you can get, is just, yeah, magical. McKenna Grace is great. She, for me, absolutely carries the film. Paul Rudd's great, but he's Paul Rudd. He's doing what he does. That's fine. But McKenna Grace, if she wasn't in this movie, I think I'd be having a rough time. Yeah, they pull a lot of her dialogue from a joke book, but she's just fun to watch. And she's just...
yeah.
The way she talks to her mother is... it's just like, it's fine. I understand. You're not a real mum. So, like, you're not great at this stuff. So I'll do the science.
It was a little weird for me, the Finn Wolfhard thing, just because of how close Stranger Things is to Ghostbusters anyway. Yeah. And it was just like, I don't know, it was almost like, is it a shared universe? Like, what are we doing here?
It may as well be.
It's wild in that way. I think for me, McKenna Grace does steal the show. She is the best thing about it. You mentioned the joke book. That is one of those things where I was like, okay, like, I've heard all these jokes before. Well, maybe not all of them. I've heard most of these jokes before. Mm. They're really funny. They're cute little jokes or whatever. But she delivers them so well.
Yeah.
And the character herself is so interesting that, I don't want to take that away from her. I think she does an absolutely great job and has shown a lot of range as she's grown up from, you know, Gifted that, you know, we've seen her in and other things that we've seen her in. So... no, I think McKenna Grace is really, really good.
Yeah, and there is, like I said, there's a kernel of a story here that's super interesting, and the setup and the big bad and all of that stuff that's happening and why everything is happening on this farm and how the Ghostbusters story from as they went into the 90s ended on this farmhouse is brilliant, and that's the film that I want, and the back end... abandons that for a
nostalgia kind
of,
fest.
Yeah, for a nostalgia fest and a retrospective of the last Ghostbusters film. And
Well, the first Ghostbusters film.
Yeah, the first Ghostbusters film.
Yeah. Which apparently they're treating as the only other Ghostbusters film.
Yeah, they're not acknowledging at all.
No,
I mean, there's not a huge amount to acknowledge, but...
well, I mean, you get to Ecto-1 and it doesn't have the ghost, you know, holding up two fingers. Like, no, you know, did somebody redo that? Did somebody, like, take that off and put the original on there?
They
would
have had to, wouldn't they? Yeah, I hadn't even noticed that. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
But there is a handing of the mantle to a new generation that I 100% thought this was going to be, but it isn't. And it really makes me question whether there is a plan for a sequel to this. I mean, I'm sure if it made enough money, there would be, but... I really feel like this was a love letter to the 1984 film, which makes sense considering who's made the film, and nothing else. I don't see this as a kickstart to a new franchise. If anything, it's a reaction to how off the rails 2016 went.
Yeah, a couple of things I want to mention. First of all, there's an introduction of a new named ghost, Muncher.
Who I thought was Slimer, and they just got the name wrong. But there is a difference.
There is absolutely a difference, yes. And I kind of liked that. That, to me, is what the rest of this movie was missing in some ways, is
something
just...
original?
Well, yes. Something original in the Ghostbusters movie had so many of those moments where it's like, oh, that's funny what that ghost is doing. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
There's not an, in my opinion, there's not enough ghost trapping here. There's not enough different kinds of ghosts.
There's not enough goofy comedy in it. Other than the one-liners, it's missing, it's so sincere and earnest. It's missing a lot of, I hate to say it, but a bit of Venkman being a creep. It's missing a little bit of that.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Also, Logan Kim plays a character, yes, I'm not mistaken, named Podcast.
Yes.
Is the character's name. Mm-hmm.
Does a lot of work in video.
Listen, Hollywood, we're right here. Just come ask us how podcasts really work.
Yeah.
We'll help you out. I promise. It's like, no. Do they think that the most people, and maybe they're right, do you think most people who are watching the movie don't understand podcasts or what? Like, what is this? Like, the Mighty Ducks TV show basically has a character named Podcast as well.
Right.
That's always carrying a microphone around and doing stuff. And
it would make for a terrible show.
Right.
But to be fair, he does only have one listener. So maybe they do know. And maybe they do know that this format isn't working.
Yeah. Yeah. But I like the kid.
Yeah.
Like, I like the character. He's fun. He's funny. You know, all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of this movie overall. It's like, oh, I like that, but that's kind of dumb. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it kind of went in waves.
Yeah.
Like that, especially towards the end. I'm just looking at the cast list, and apparently Josh Gad voiced Muncher. So great work. Voicing Muncher. J.K. Simmons.
I actually really liked.
Yeah.
One of my, not in it much, but he was brilliant.
Yeah. So yeah. And some cameos that we're not going to spoil here. But yeah, I think if you love the original Ghostbusters, you will find things to love here.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I don't know, for most people, maybe that nostalgia stuff works. I know it certainly did for some people in the theater that we were watching with. Like, you know, they loved that stuff. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's kind of like it undercuts everything you were trying to do in the first part of the movie.
Totally agree. It's a lot of setup, a little bit of execution, and then this is the movie I actually wanted to make, but I needed to do this other stuff to get you in the cinema.
Yeah, totally. If you're a Ghostbusters fan, obviously you're going to see it. Otherwise, maybe just wait till it's on streaming or something and maybe check it out.
It was
then.
Very pretty to look at, actually. The cinematography is really, really good. It is a pretty film.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Any final thoughts on Ghostbusters Afterlife?
I'm going to call somebody else next time.
Well, that leads me to a question, Ian. Mm-hmm. Who are you going to call?
Well, I am trying to think of who I would want to direct. Chris Nolan. Just do it.
A Chris Nolan Ghostbusters film.
Come on. With time traveling.
Yeah. Yeah.
A time traveling Ghostbusters film.
Yeah, the streams are time streams. And you don't want to cross the time streams.
They're getting crossed.
All right. Let's move on to Encanto.
Hola, casita.
Floors! Drawers! Let's go!
In time, every member of our family...
Cecilia, up top!
...was given their own magical gift.
I understand you.
I'm not super strong like Luisa.
The donkey's got out again.
On it!
Or effortlessly perfect like Señorita Perfecta Isabella. But Mama, why am I the only one that didn't get a gift?
You're just as special as anyone else in this family.
The tale of an extraordinary family, the Madrigals, who live hidden in the mountains of Colombia, in a magical house in a vibrant town in a wondrous charmed place called Encanto. The magic of the Encanto has blessed every child in the family with a unique gift, from super strength to the power to heal every child except one, Mirabel. But when she discovers that the magic surrounding the Encanto is in danger, Mirabel decides that she, the only ordinary Madrigal, might just be her exceptional family's last hope. This is Disney's latest animated film, Stephanie Beatriz, you might know from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. in the lead role, and Wilmer Valderrama, who you might know from that 70s show, in there as well. What do you think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
High side of liked it.
Nice.
I really liked it.
I'm going to land on the loved it.
Yay! Surprise.
Not that anybody's surprised by that. And I just feel like Disney Animation is just hitting it out of the park for the most part this last decade. Mm-hmm. It's just been insane. We were talking earlier today, for whatever reason, about that run that they've kind of got going from Tangled on. Or even you go back to Bolt, you know, like Bolt, Tangled, all those movies. And it's just like every single one is just solid filmmaking. And they continue it here. I think for me, the main thing I love about this movie is the idea of turning on the head, the special gift idea that this movie says something along the lines, without spoiling a lot of what's going on here, it says something along the lines of that the gifts are awesome and they're helpful and they're amazing and you should always be conscious to use your gifts for good, but your value isn't tied to what you're good at. Like, you know, and that's a big deal. That's a big thing for people to know and hear. Like, because I think a lot of times we can look at what other people are good at or what they do well. And, you know, we have that wish thing. Like, I wish that I could do that well. And a lot of movies have said, it's okay if you don't, you've got this other thing that you can do. That's a beautiful message too. But this movie says, your value isn't even in this other thing that you can do. It isn't in those things. Your value is because you're alive. Like you're a human being. I really, really did love that. And yes, I did tear up quite a bit in this movie. It got me a couple times.
I had a moment right at the end. The final song.
Mm-hmm.
The song with her sister.
Mm-hmm.
They go from hating each other to loving each other. And it's beautiful.
Yeah, there's a real grace and forgiveness kind of thing that the movie is doing as well. Tell me some of your thoughts.
It's what Disney does best. It's take a really, really simple allegory and then dial it up to 11 and make it fantastical, but the underlying message is really simple, and it's such a simple story. It feels like a really small Disney film, and I think that's just why they work. They don't overcomplicate things. They just get it done. That gift thing is so important. I was wondering, without going into spoilers, how the main character, would she end up with a gift? Mm-hmm. Would something along those lines happen? I love the direction that they went with it. The message is all of these children are your gift. What they can do is icing on top. Fantastic, right? But they all have inherent value regardless. And man, if that reaches some kids and that actually sinks in an entertaining way, then that's a good way to be raised. It's a good way to kind of live your life, that I have meaning, I have value by being me, and whatever else I do that is a benefit to the world is icing on top, but you can just exist.
Yeah.
So it's hard not to get on board with that message.
Yeah, there's a real interesting thing where the idea of success pressure that can happen and so that stuff is powerful here. Just Disney doing the themes is always, you know, that's what ties me into a lot of the stuff.
It's the anti-King Richard film.
Yeah fair enough. I got a chance to see this in a Dolby certified theater, and if you've ever been able to do that, it is an incredible experience. It is the only experience that I think compares to high-end TVs now that you can get in your home on a giant screen. And it was so crisp, so clear. The sound was so good. This movie, I don't know if it's as beautiful as I think it is, but man, what I saw was just blew me away.
Well, that was my next point. It is gorgeous.
Okay, so it wasn't just that I was in like a top-notch theater.
I would like go and see this in IMAX or go and do something else with it, because the colors are stunning. It's a palette that I don't remember seeing in a Disney film, because it's every palette. It's all of the colors in a film. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. And the visualization of how some of these gifts work and those kind of things was really cool as well. What did you think about the music?
I am terrible for remembering music and songs in films and scores, mm-hmm. but there's obviously I'm going to say Spanish or Hispanic theme to the entire movie, which mm-hmm. is, I love it because it was so upbeat. And there wasn't, it felt like every single song, it actually did something. It moved the story along a bit. It wasn't that, usually it's quite jarring to me mm-hmm. When everyone's bursting into song and the house is singing. I'm like, oh, it kind of worked here with the magic and everything. It moved the story along. They were catchy. Like there was a mambo or like a salsa number in the middle that was, which was so, so good. The No 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 Bruno song, loved it. I listened to that on the way home. So yeah, the songs really stuck with me. I really enjoyed them.
Yeah, me too. I love the music in this. Not that that's a surprise either, and mm-hmm. Especially not a surprise considering Lin-Manuel Miranda is, the one putting it together, composing the music.
I'm more and more convinced that that man is making films for me. Much like Pixar is making films for you, this guy, he knew that I didn't like musicals, and his life work is to change my mind, and he's doing it. Lin-Manuel's
life goal is to be like, Ian, no. Musicals are amazing, and I'm going to prove it to you.
Uh-huh. He's winning. He's winning that fight.
Yeah, I will mention Colombia is where this takes place. So yeah, definitely Spanish themed and all that. And I thought the cultural stuff was really, really good.
Yeah.
The casting seems very cultural appropriate. Mm-hmm. So yeah, all that stuff is pretty amazing. Anything else you want to talk about with Encanto? Kind of sticking in your mind?
No, I think we've pretty much covered that off. I really liked it. I'm wondering what stopped me from loving it. I think this probably isn't fair, but it's not my genre. It's not the musical animated films don't tend to be what I go for. So I think it's just, there's always going to be that disconnect where it doesn't bring me completely to tears. It doesn't knock me over completely, but I can really appreciate it for what it is.
My one last thing probably is just another moment that I will tell you to pay attention for, or if you've seen it, I want, how you felt about it, but there's a relationship between her and the youngest child that mm-hmm. just slayed me a couple times. There's a moment where he's scared to do something and, motions for her. It is just, it's so beautiful and amazing.
She's a great sister. She's so, so good.
Yeah.
She's a great granddaughter as well.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Heavy recommend for me. Check it out. Encanto is in theaters, and I imagine will show up on Disney Plus probably within the next few months. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how they're doing things now.
Oh, I haven't got a clue. It could be on tomorrow. It could be on there right now.
It's true. That's true. No, it's not on there right now. It is not on there.
You would know. You'd be watching it right now instead of recording this.
That's correct. Instead of recording this show. Before we head on to the best ever challenge today, a reminder that you can support Sift Pop as a Sift Pop member at Patreon. Lots of fun stuff there. We recorded a bonus episode for our members that deals with award season. I'm a week away from having to turn in my nominations ballot, so we kind of did a check-in on award season and what movies are looking interesting. So if you want to check that out, all you got to do is become a member at that level, and there are several other fun things as well you can check out there. All of that is at patreon.com/siftpop. All right, on to the best ever challenge. We're going to do best ever ghost movies this week in honor of Ghostbusters Afterlife. We'll go from number 5 to number 1. What do you got at number 5, Ian?
Well, for some reason, I usually start these best ever challenges by Googling ghost things. I was like, not a lot of films are coming up. And for some reason, I forgot the horror genre existed at all. I was like, there's not really a lot of films with ghosts in them.
It's interesting, too, to make the distinction between demons and ghosts.
Correct.
Right? Uh-huh. That's an interesting, I tried to keep it to ghost movies more than just demonic forces or, those kinds
of things. Exactly. Yeah. Which I may have actually got wrong. But my number 5 is The Ring.
Okay.
Yeah, I know this isn't the best movie in the world, but I love the socks off of it. It does it for me. That creepy video that's going around, it's like Blair Witch, but a bit more watchable for me. So there's this in-universe thing that affects people, and it has a bit of mystery to it. The effects of when somebody dies from the ring is some of the most terrifying makeup effects artistry that I've ever seen. It is spooky as heck. And the ring girl is Yeah, got to be one of the spookiest images in... It's up there in horror history, that crawling... It's been parodied so many times now, but...
Yeah, that reverse ring, really, crab walk kind of thing. Exactly,
yeah. The Ring did it first, to my knowledge, I think, or it's early up there.
Somebody is going to let us know.
Somebody will tell
me. Somebody will let us know that there is a movie that did the reverse crab walk, you know, before
in
The Ring.
Some Austrian film
in
the
definitely, 30s. I don't think it's over the top to say, if there is something before that, that The Ring was the one that most people saw it in for the first time.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a good call. I don't know that I'm not a horror movie person, and so it's hard for me to say I enjoyed The Ring, but I did respect kind of what it was doing. So, so good choice. My number five is David Lowery's A Ghost Story. Did you ever
see
A Ghost Story?
No, I haven't seen this, no.
I loved this movie, but as with other David Lowery movies, which, by the way, Spencer, right? Isn't it Spencer that's a David Lowery film?
Yeah.
I'll have to look it up, but or you can. But Ghost Story is very much a contemplative kind of movie, and I really, really enjoyed what it had to say about permanence, what it had to say about, you know, how... life is transitory. It's just a really, really interesting film. But fair warning, it is going to feel slow. Don't go into it expecting like a action movie or horror movie or anything like that. It's just a really interesting look at what it means to be, you know, human and to feel apart. A Ghost Story would be my number.
I'll add that to my list. I don't know why I couldn't immediately get to it. Stephen Knight and Pablo Larraín.
Did what for Spencer?
Yeah.
You're talking about? Yeah. That could be, it is, yeah, it was a Pablo Larraín, directed Spencer. That is correct. I was thinking of something else with, David Lowery, but there was something he did recently, that was stuck. Oh, The Green Knight. That's what I was thinking. The Green Knight.
Yeah.
Very similar to that. And in fact, that's the, he hasn't done a movie since A Ghost Story until The Green Knight. You may want to check that out again. Or I guess he did The Old Man and the Gun as well. So, but anyhow, A Ghost Story is definitely worth a watch. What do you got at number four?
This is where I may have stuffed it a bit. Insidious, because I think that is Demons. I don't know if that's
Ghost. Yeah, it might be, but we'll count it. We'll count it.
Yeah, this... Oh, man. I dump Insidious, Sinister, Crescendo, Conjuring, that's the one.
The crescendoing?
All of them I kind of lump into the same box, but Insidious was the one that I saw first, and it kind of did something different for me. There's a lot of stuff in this that's in daylight, so it's not in the dark. I mean, there's a scene in the kitchen where they're just having a conversation, suddenly camera pans and Demon is over Patrick's shoulder, and it is freaking terrifying. Something about this film that just ticked all of my boxes. It's different to your regular haunting films for me. It feels like the demons are still doing some dumb stuff, but there's more of a mission behind it, where they can actually get to the bottom and possibly fix the problem. The sequels didn't do a huge amount for me, but this first one was scary in all the right ways.
Yeah, I definitely had The Conjuring in my honorable mentions. There's definitely something there that I would say is, you know, great filmmaking and does good stuff. So Insidious, yeah, totally get it. Number four is where I have Ghostbusters. So not Ghostbusters Afterlife, but Ghostbusters.
For some reason I didn't include Ghostbusters, because that would be I would be trumping that. But what did I include Ghostbusters in my list? Right, okay, I'm going to kick something off. Trump.
Insidious no longer is on his list. He's got Ghostbusters on there somewhere.
Yep.
What is your number three?
Beetlejuice.
It's a good choice. I had an honorable mentions. Yeah, totally.
This is 100% a nostalgia childhood thing. One of my earliest film memories. Still, I need to talk to my parents about the films they let me watch when I grew up. Because this is a really messed up film to let your under 10-year-old watch.
But Beetlejuice was one of those movies. I mean, look, it was the 80s, right? Like, it was one of those things where stuff was for kids, kind of, but it was still kind of messed
up. For adults as well.
I mean, look at the Goonies or any of those movies. They're like, they've got like weird stuff in them, but But yeah, no, it's I wouldn't blame your parents for Beetlejuice. There were many, many parents that let their kids watch Beetlejuice, for sure.
But yeah, Michael Keaton just... what? Like, that's not... It's not Michael Keaton. I remember the day that I kind of became more aware of actors and movies and stuff and who people was, and I was like, that's not Batman. That's not... That can't be right.
Yeah.
But it's an insane performance. Like, it's more like Jim Carrey or something like that. Film just makes me laugh. It's visually ridiculous. I remember watching the cartoon when I was growing up as well, and it's exactly what I wanted from cartoon into movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Good choice. My number three is Field of Dreams.
Nope, not one that I've heard of, mentioned lots, but not... So who's the ghost in this one? Is Kevin Costner the ghost?
Kevin Costner is not the ghost.
But he is.
Kevin Costner's dad is the ghost.
Got it. Okay.
As well as other members of the baseball team live in the Field of Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
This is just... listen, if you haven't seen Field of Dreams, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know if you need some sort of nostalgia for the sport of baseball, like just the idea of throwing a baseball around with your dad. Like, that's like an American thing, maybe.
But you can transfer that to football or soccer or whatever. Yeah. Some sport.
Yeah. That's what this movie is about. It's about that nostalgia for like growing up and be like, hey, dad, want to catch, you know, like want to go throw the ball around a little bit. And, you know, it is one of the sickest jokes that when, you know, kids need us the most is the time when we are busiest with trying to, you know, pay for the house and support, you know, like that family work balance is such a hard thing.
Yeah.
And so this movie kind of, you know, shows why that longing is there and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I would definitely check out Field of Dreams if you haven't checked it out. On to your number two.
Soul.
I guess that's a ghost. I didn't think of that as a ghost story.
I've just ruined your list, haven't I?
But they're souls, ghosts. Not ghosts. But what's the difference, really? Maybe you're right. I think you're right. I did not consider them ghosts. Because ghosts have like
a haunting element to them.
And
but they are... Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm not right.
They're embodied souls.
They die. I mean, they are dead and they're coming back.
They're the souls. Well, most of them don't come back.
No, that's true. Yeah, they go into the big mosquito zapper in the sky. Okay. Then this is the perfect place to put Ghostbusters.
Fair enough. I like the choice of souls. Soul's a great movie. But
I have ruined this list. I'm not going to get invited back again. Ghostbusters. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what needs to be said other than, Bill Murray being Bill Murray? And here's another one. Like, hey, kids, go watch a ghost give a grown man a BJ. Like, you know.
Quite explicitly. Like,
yeah.
There's no mistaking what's going on there. And hey, here's the hero. He is horrible to women. He's horrible to men. He's horrible to everybody. Making a film in 2021 that almost apologizes for what he did.
Well, it's interesting because they kept the world building of like the gatekeeper, and they like they have to have sex before or whatever, but they did it in such a tamer way or whatever. It's really interesting.
But there are so many one-liners in this film. Like the comedy in this film is what's missing from every other Ghostbusters film. It's hilarious.
Yeah. I agree. I had it at number four. You had it at number two. Mm-hmm. My number two is The Sixth Sense.
Trump.
Oh, fair enough.
I'm really worried about what's number one that I've forgotten now.
You know, you're fine. You're fine. It'll all make sense when we get there. So talk about it since you have it at number one.
Yeah. I mean, I've mentioned this before, but I had the ending spoiled for me as I was watching it. I must have been about 17, and it was a friend's birthday party, and we watched The Sixth Sense, and dad just comes in and says, this is the one where he's a ghost all along. And I just snapped my neck around. I was like, gee, thanks.
Dad!
But yeah, it's Shyamalan doing what Shyamalan does, and it's probably, I wonder if in his filmography he would undo this film. Not make it, but maybe make it at a different point, because it feels like after this point it was, what's the twist? What's the turn? What's he going to do next?
But I think he likes that.
Yeah, you might be
I think he likes it.
He
may have moments.
He doesn't have to do it.
No, he doesn't. And I think there may be moments where he feels trapped by it, but I doubt it. I think he really enjoyed. I think he really saw himself as a modern Hitchcock type filmmaker. And Hitchcock had the same thing. Like Hitchcock was definitely one who people were like, oh, what's the twist? What's the story turn? Yeah. Where's the cameo? You know? And he does all those things. He puts himself in his movies. He, you know, so I definitely think he's cool with it. I don't know that he would change anything about that, but yeah, regardless, no, it's great.
even without the story turn, it still works. It's still a great movie. It's still entertaining. It's still, I'm not gonna say it brings me to tears, but it gets close. It gets there.
Yeah It's good stuff. My number one is Coco.
Seen this.
You should. It's great. There's a little a company called Pixar that makes movies, and it's one of their best.
You should see Soul.
there are many Pixar movies that grow in my estimation over time. This one has grown the most recently.
Oh wow!
Upon future viewings, it has possibly the most emotional moment in a Pixar movie in a long time. There is a song he sings in this that is just absolutely devastating in all the right ways. And it's just, it's really, really good. You know, it's a story about those who have come before us and, you know, and that kind of stuff, featured around the Day of the Dead. So yeah, check out Coco if you haven't checked it out. It is definitely one of the best. So there you go. Best ever ghost movies. Did you have any honorable mentions that you wanted to throw out there?
Yeah. The Casper.
Do you like that?
I love that film too.
Nice.
But that's a childhood thing that wasn't going to make the list. And it has a brief cameo from the Ghostbusters, which that was my first, I think it was. It was my first ever experience as a child of, oh, things can overlap.
Yeah.
I was like, they're the Ghostbusters. And I like remember pausing it and thinking, how are that's they not here? A ripoff. That is the Ghostbusters. That's what are they doing here?
Yeah.
But I have no idea why Casper was the final straw, because they run out of the building and I can't, somebody says, they said, we're not going to do this job, and whoever owns the house, he says, well, who are we going to call? And they say, someone else. That's just a little bit of my childhood that I really, really enjoyed.
Nice. I think we have to mention Ghost.
Yes,
you know, Swayze.
That is currently how we're recording this right now. I am behind Aaron.
That's right,
touching
that's
all right. of the things.
Yes. Yeah. I have a great Unchained Melody story I could tell you at some time. A Christmas Carol. I have to mention A Christmas Carol.
Oh,
that's
no,
a ghost story. That is absolutely a ghost story.
That probably would have made it to my list, actually, had I thought of
Which
it.
Which version? Which
the Muppet Christmas Muppet, Carol. The only Christmas one, Carol.
Nicole Kidman in The Others. I don't know if you've ever seen The Others.
I have seen The Others, not a fan.
I think that's worthwhile. The Shining is a ghost story.
Technically, it is.
Should probably
mention
that.
Dr. Sleep mentioned a lot as well.
And then I wanted to mention The Frighteners. Did you ever see The Frighteners?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to look it up just to make sure. I think it's Peter Jackson. But it is Michael J. Fox.
Okay.
Basically fighting ghosts. And it's...
How do I not know about
it's
this?
It's so fun. Peter Jackson directing Michael J. Fox.
That's amazing. How do I not know
in
this
a ghost
exists?
Story. Listen, it's fun stuff. It just kind of came and went. Danny Elfman does the music.
Oh, that's... Jeffrey Combs is in it. He's basically in every single Star Trek episode that's ever been made.
So check out The Frighteners. It's just fun. It's not going to change your world. It's just a little bit
might.
Of fun.
It might.
We'll watch it tonight.
Yeah, let's do it.
There you go. Those are our best ever ghost movies. If you want to let us know what we missed, feel free to feedback@sifpop.com. Let's hit our buried treasure before we finish up. Ian, what is that one area of any piece of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about? Actually, I'll let you go last since you're the guest.
Thank you very much.
I want to talk about Parallel Mothers. So Parallel Mothers is one amongst, I don't know, a couple dozen movies I've watched in the last couple weeks preparing for award season. And it is probably going to compete for my Best Foreign Language Film nominations.
Nice.
It is really, really good. This is Pedro Almodovar, his latest movie. And basically is about two women who give birth at the same time, in some interesting things that happen as they become friends. And I don't really want to say much more than that. One of the things I love about award season is just like watching movies completely blind. Mm-hmm. Like I can watch Ghostbusters Afterlife blind, but I'm not completely blind. There's enough conversation on Twitter and different places or whatever. But when mm-hmm. I go into award season, it's absolutely like I didn't know anything about this movie. And it's really good. And so definitely one I would recommend people check out. It's called Parallel Mothers.
Lovely.
What about you?
You're going to get so sick of me talking about this, but it is the Beatles documentary that we watched because we've talked about it multiple times today. But anybody that is I'd say even if you're not a Beatles fan and you're into live music or you're into the creative process or if you're just human, like there is some just human social studies stuff going on in this documentary. And we need a different word because, we kind of worked out documentary was a weird thing to call it.
I think it's just footage. I honestly think this is more a documentary than most documentaries. Yeah. Like it is literally just documenting this time, together. It's
following the Beatles as they prepare for one of their final live shows. And for some reason, they decided that all of this prep is going to take place in one warehouse over the course of 2 weeks before the show is live. They're going to have two dress rehearsals and they want it to be entirely new material. So it is watching the Beatles and Ringo just put music together and create songs and argue about how to write music and just watching McCartney just be really self-aware that he's being a bit of an asshole, but he knows that's the only way that he can communicate. And he apologizes for that. Like, I know I'm shooting you down. I know I'm making this really difficult, but this is how we have to write this song.
Yeah.
And what we're doing right now isn't going to work. And the first part is 2.5 hours of watching them hang out and jam and talk about everyone else that was huge in the back end of the 60s as well and who they want to be like. So to hear the Beatles say, you know what, I really wish we were more like this person, it really humanizes them. As a big Beatles fan, it was I love that there was no lens on it. There's no slant here of trying to promote the controversy or any narrator that's trying to fill in the blanks and direct what I'm thinking about. Mm-hmm. It's put the footage in front of me and I'll make my own assessment.
Yeah.
It's
just like hanging out in the room with the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. It's definitely a different kind of movie experience. Mm. Please go into it knowing that it's very much just a hangout in the room with the Beatles. Mm-hmm. I can see many, many people watching this and going, come on,
get on with it.
Edit a little bit. Like,
yeah,
and it's like, no, that's not the point here.
Mm-hmm.
But you may not like that. And that's okay. Like, it's not like you have to, but there is something really interesting about just presenting the footage.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of editing that goes on just because he's dealing with different sources, audio, video, trying to put all that together so that it feels right. Like you're in the room and hearing mm-hmm. these conversations. And that's on Disney Plus. Three episodes totaling like 8 hours of
it's good stuff.
Footage.
Get it in my veins.
So there you go. The Beatles Get Back on Disney Plus and Parallel Mothers, I think, is in theaters some places. You may have to wait for a while on that one. Not sure about that. We did it. I think we lasted more than half an hour.
Or
I think we actually, I think we actually may have broken 40 minutes. Who knows? Thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to producer Phil for putting the show together today. Thank you to Ian for joining us today. Anything you want to promote, anywhere you want to send people?
Yeah, just come and hang out on Twitter where I have horrible movie takes, apparently, and everyone tells me that I'm wrong about the Spider-Man films. You'll find me at Witsind or Witsend. I don't know how to say that yet, but it's WHITTSINNED.
The beauty is, you're at Wits End.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm
like
at
that's
Wits End.
You're just you're at Wits End. and that's just how it is. WHITTSINNED, correct?
Correct.
Very nice. Much love and gratitude to our SIFPOP members for giving monthly to make SIFPOP a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month. You get access to bonus episodes as well as some other fun perks at the different levels. You can find out more at patreon.com/SIFPOP. Lots of ways to connect with us. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Or you can email us at feedback@SIFPOP.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too. So let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than forgetting that one time ghosts invaded New York 25 years ago. We will be back next week with more movies, more discussion, and maybe even more than 40 minutes. We'll see you then.
Don't count on it.